This week on Straight Talk Africa, 120 million people have been forcibly displaced worldwide. Ongoing wars in Ukraine, Gaza, Sudan, and the violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo have pushed people away from their homes. Some spend their whole life in refugee camps, others trek to a host country, and some become agents of change. Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters here in Washington. I'm Vincent McCorry. Now, every year, World Refugee Day gives the international community the opportunity to focus on the plight of displaced people. Now, the figures are staggering. One in every 69 people in the world are displaced. These are refugees, asylum seekers, internally displaced people, people fleeing conflict or persecution or natural disasters due to climate change. The first figures that the United Nations Refugee Agency released for 2023 show that over 117 million people have been displaced. The UNHCR recently revised these figures to over 120 million, marking an increase in the first 4 months of 2024. Now, for more insight, we turn to VOA United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir, who joins us from the UN headquarters in New York. Hi, Margaret, and welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. Happy almost World Refugee Day.
I know we're close there. Now, we have seen an unprecedented surge in forcibly displaced people this year. How is the United Nations trying to deal with it?
Right. Well, you said the number. It is staggering. 120 million people. The UN says that's nearly the population of Japan. So imagine an entire country of displaced people across the globe. Bottom line, this number is not going to go down significantly unless there are political settlements to major conflicts. This conflict is really the main driver of displacement across the globe. So here at the UN, there are special envoys, there are diplomats, they are all working on different crises to try and resolve them, but they are often obstructed on the ground by the stakeholders, the actors who are the protagonists in the conflicts, and those who are supporting them, external actors. So this has been a real problem for the UN to get traction in trying to resolve some of these crises. And just three situations of refugees in the world are basically responsible for 52% of all displaced people, and that's Ukraine, Syria, and Afghanistan. So imagine if they could just stop two wars and bring human rights and stability to Afghanistan, what an impact that could have.
Now, bringing it to the continent of Africa, at the moment, how many are known to be displaced by the different conflicts across the continent?
Well, it's around 40 million people, and that includes refugees, internally displaced, and asylum seekers. Across Africa, the largest number is internally displaced, and we're seeing Democratic Republic of Congo, the violence in the east, driving those numbers. There are about 5 million internally displaced people in Congo. And Sudan, in this past year, has really exploded. It is currently the largest internal displacement crisis on the planet. There are nearly 10 million Sudanese people who are internally displaced.
Now,
it's really shocking.
Yeah, indeed. We always hear about pledges being made by the aid organizations up to this point. We, at the same time, keep hearing people complaining that the refugees in Africa get way less money as compared to those who have been affected by wars, say, in Ukraine. So how is the UN addressing this issue?
Well, it's really not just Africa that is underfunded. It is not just refugee crises. Every humanitarian appeal at the United Nations this year is dramatically underfunded. I mean, we're talking like 4% funded, 6% funded, and we're halfway through the year already. So it's not looking good for the funding. And you know, the UN has given from its own central emergency fund to African crises in double digits and in the millions. And like you mentioned, there have also been donor conferences. We just had in April the conference in Paris for Sudan and also one for Ethiopia in April, I think it was, raised about $630 million. So there is definitely donor fatigue out there, but there's also still contributions coming in. And countries that don't want mass migration to their shores have a strategic interest in giving to these appeals from the UN.
Wow. Well, thank you very much, Margaret. I really appreciate those insights and your help with the UN reports there. That's Margaret Bashir, VOA United Nations correspondent. Now, often the term refugee or asylum seeker has a stigma attached to it. It can imply a lack of education or skills, and often there is resistance integrating into a host country. Our next guest defies all perceptions, or rather preconceptions. And joining us from New York is Mary Maker, Goodwill Ambassador of the United Nations Refugee Agency. Mary is a South Sudanese native who grew up in Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. And with me in studio is John Thon Majok, Director of the Refugee and Forced Displacement Initiative at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. John is also a former refugee from South Sudan, and he has lived for 13 years in refugee camps in Ethiopia and Kenya. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
All right. I want to come first to you, Mary. You know, we've just mentioned that the word refugee seems to evoke so many kind of images and thoughts in people's minds. You have been a refugee, and now you live outside a refugee camp. So let's begin from there. How do you help a person understand, or what did you yourself come to really understand as how people perceive a refugee and why they perceive a refugee the way they do?
I feel like most people don't know who refugees are because, again, of how it's always portrayed. You know, like Chimamanda talks about the dangers of a single story. And I feel like the world many a times think of refugees as these people at our borders that are trying to get in. And they don't think of a mother. They don't think of a father. They don't think of a child. Right? There's just so much detachment from who refugees are that a refugee is me or it could actually be you, right? And even that term in itself, refugee, there's so many terms to being displaced, displaced person, refugee, immigrant. At the end of the day, you left your home and no one ever wants to leave home because home is comfort. Home is a cooked meal, is friends, is people that you know. But when things force you to move, that term in itself is something that we wrestle with. Do I want to be known as Mary, the refugee, or Mary, the singer, the dancer, or like this person that has a personality in them? So most of the time, the world do not know refugees because of how it's portrayed. Refugees are actually anybody that has been forced to leave their home because of circumstances. And even them, or even us as refugees, we wrestle with that term. We wrestle with that perception of who is a refugee.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And John, maybe your thoughts on the same, and especially the fact that when you see people in refugee camp, you see a young fellow in a refugee camp, the sense people have is this person who is living in terrible conditions and probably has no hopes, cannot probably amount to anything. It's just a refugee.
Yeah. You know, you just heard the numbers reported, 1 in 17 million refugees and displaced people in general. Out of that, 47 million are children below 18 years. These children have a bright future, but the circumstance they are in have just warehoused them somewhere where they don't see hope. And so the story of refugees need to be framed differently, not just the labels, the numbers, But these are the human faces behind the numbers. These are children, these are our neighbors, these are our friends, these are our fellow human beings. And so I argue that refugees must be identified by their humanity as opposed to their circumstance. Mm-hmm. The circumstances that they are in, they are vulnerable, but vulnerability is not inability. And so we want to frame by talking about their talents. When they feel safe, they will contribute to the society just like anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I think giving them the opportunity in the host countries, just like I was given opportunity when I was in Ethiopia, in Kenya, I think you bring the best out of them, and then the world can see what is not often seen. And so talking about their agency, not just as passive victims, not just as aid recipients, they are human with potential. And I think that will frame the narrative.
And which is important to always have in mind, because you came from somewhere. Nobody chooses to be a refugee. Now, Mary, you were a young person living in a refugee camp in Kakuma in Kenya. At what point did you know that I need more than this? My life has to be more than just a refugee girl in a camp.
I feel like it's since I was a little girl. You are in a refugee camp tucked away in the middle of nowhere, right? And I look up into the sky and see all these planes passing. And like, I know there's a life outside these camp walls. I know there's something beyond me. I'm in a classroom of 200 kids with one teacher that is probably not a trained teacher trying to teach me the new language. And even just the idea of languages and having to relearn and assimilation, and you see your mother, your strong mother, become so vulnerable in front of your eyes. And I know this is not how life is supposed to be. You know, my parents always told me the stories of Sudan and the beauty that they left behind. And I knew there was something out there for me. So I think since the moment I came to Kakuma, I knew I wasn't supposed to be there. Right. And you see visitors coming to the camp and like, they must have come from somewhere. And you see people crying when they look at you and they're like, okay, I must be living a shitty life. Right. And there's something out there for me. So for me, education became a leeway or a way to move out of the camp. And I wanted to dream of a life outside those camp walls every single day. And I saw education as a way to get myself out of that. And so many other refugees still see themselves, but again, it's always like a dead end. It's a false promise, because very niche opportunities come to the camp. And that is 20 years. Like, I came as a little girl, and you realize you're going through puberty in the camp. You realize that you're now 10 years old. You're turning 20. Oh my God, I'm going to get married in the camp. I'm like, there's no way. It's a temporal space. And you start to look up things. You know, you go on Instagram as a young teenager in the camp. You're like, oh, there is a life beyond this. Mm-hmm. There is a life beyond getting food rations every month. There is a life beyond like 7 p.m. curfews and you have to be in your house. And you see COVID and everyone is surprised that there is curfews, and that's our life. That's how we grew mm-hmm. up. We knew there was a curfew at 7, right? So you start mm-hmm. to see how other people are living their lives, and they're like, something is not right or something is not adding up.
Wow, I didn't even think about the curfew part. But, John, you talked about, you know, 47 million young people in camps, as refugees, people displaced. 2 million of those born just between 2018 and 2023. You talk about, you did a very beautiful report titled Vulnerability is Not Inability. And I've just said that these are people that behind those faces, behind those numbers, those are human beings, those are faces. Question is, does where a person ends up sometimes determine their trajectory in life? Say, a camp in Kenya, another one lands in a camp in Uganda. Can that make a difference in how this person actually ends up?
Yeah, I think different countries have different way of hosting these displaced people. And those policies make a difference in the way a child look toward the future, whether the child can see there's a hope beyond the current situation. In Kenya, for example, I lived there since the 1990s to 2001. And there was a sense that there's no way beyond this if we have to live here for so long. And that's where this leave experience come in. When I got the opportunity to come here, you know, I see there is a change in narrative that people need to be lifted up, that there is hope beyond where they are. And where the host countries come in is that give these people opportunities to live their life in full. Refugee status should not hamper refugee dreams. And so in Uganda, they give refugee land to settle, and then they can cultivate to make their livelihoods and meet their ends. Mm-hmm.
Which makes them feel almost like normal, to some degree, like you have a home.
Exactly, sort of. Yes, yeah. Self-sufficient.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a society where you are self-reliant.
Yeah.
But when you come to a refugee camp, you live a life of dependency on the UN. Mm. And so policies make a difference. If you integrate these people into the society they are in, they will make their life better.
Mm. Yeah.
On the other hand, if that situation is not, you know, the host countries are not able to give them policies, you know, integration, then resettlement become an option, which is the way I came here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also a durable solution.
Yeah. To these people. And you'll tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah.
But it's time for a short break. When you come back, we'll continue our discussion about how access to education can change the lives of refugees, and we'll discuss what the international community can do better to help people who are forcibly displaced. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
The time of the year is here again for the world to shine a light on the rights, needs, and dreams of refugees so they can not only survive, but thrive. This week on Our Voices, we focus on the resources available for refugees by refugees, especially for women and girls. We will also highlight refugee women who are champions of change inside and outside refugee camps. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Welcome back. We are talking about the plight of refugees, but also how some of them can defy all odds and bring about change. With me from New York is Mary Mulcair, Goodwill Ambassador of the United Nations Refugee Agency. And in studio is John Thorne Majok, Director of Refugee and Forced Displacement Initiative at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Now, Mary, you know, education, I tend to think of it as first a big door and an equalizer. You were in Kakuma refugee camp. Tell me your journey in in education and how education got you to where you are today?
When I first moved to the camp, I went to Tackwell Nursery School. And as I mentioned earlier, it's 200 kids in a tiny classroom, right? And we all are going through the trauma of war, you know, and don't even understand why are we in this new camp, right? And the very first time I was taught to write my name on sand, you know, and we would sing all Arabic chants and go to get porridge, you know, and at the end of the day, you'll get like a doll or like BB5, which they used to give out at that time. It was like a feeding kind of like biscuit or something. And I loved school so much because of that. The incentives that they were giving us for that. And I could start to imagine, you know, like at that time, they'll be like, education is the key to everything. And as a child, you're taking in all of this, and it is a moment for you to heal, especially when you see other kids, you know, that probably don't even understand the same language that you're going through, but you can laugh together. And we are all from different tribes, probably enemies from back home, but in a tiny classroom, and you see it as this space where everyone can actually gather. And for me, I think that was the beginning of a passion where I knew there was a possibility of a life outside the camp from that early stage. Going on to primary school into high school, it was really challenging. Think about it. 200 kids in one classroom with 7 textbooks or 6 textbooks with a teacher that doesn't have a training. How do you win? How do you win as a refugee? Will you ever get a scholarship? Are you even like able to succeed in college? Most university, it's competitive to get into them. And I knew I had no chance. I had to sell myself out as a speaker. I'm like, okay, I need to get myself into mm-hmm. these schools. Of course, going to a Kenyan boarding school also, like they're very big on education. You have to have an A, and you know, it's critical thinking is not very much as like getting an A from an exam. So like there was a lot of pushing from my teachers and from everyone around me, but mostly from myself, knowing that I'm not a Kenyan. I am a refugee. I don't have chances to ever apply to colleges, and I don't have access to loans or things like mm-hmm. that, right? So when I graduated high school, I knew I was not going to go to college. So I went back to the camp and became a teacher, right? Again, I wasn't trained, but there's shortage of teachers. Yeah. I taught biology, and at the end of the day, like I'm taking students for like a bio lab, and we're trying to test for starch. These test tubes have been used in chemistry classes, in physics classes. So instead of like any food test turning blue-black for test of starch, it is purple. I'm like, there's no way these kids are going to win. And at the end of the day, my students in the class are like, Madam Mary, you're so passionate about education. Why aren't you in college? And that hits because they know the dead end. Mm-hmm. I started applying for opportunities and for scholarships. And in the camp, there were only 3 scholarships. There was DAFI, there was WUTH, and other few organizations that were coming in. Out of thousands of applicants, they're only taking 20. That's a drop in the ocean. Yeah. And this is just one refugee camp. How do you get into that 1%, mm-hmm. right? Do I tell you a sad story so that you take me in? I'm already in the refugee camp. It's already sad enough, right? And yeah. you have to fight for these chances. I got into a scholarship in Rwanda that I was the only second person in the camp that was taken, wow. right? And it was thousands of us. The reason why I applied for this scholarship, they were giving free lunch, okay?
Oh. And it's of course, there's a motivation.
It was a motivation.
But it got you lucky. Here. It got to you here.
I was so lucky to be among the 2 people taken in an entire camp. And in the program in Rwanda, I was taught how to type, you know, applying for Common App. And I got into St. Olaf in Minnesota. And I was so hungry for change. I really wanted to create more opportunities for refugees. So any kind of grants, I would find for all of that.
Now, right? you'll tell us a bit more about what now you've done for others. But quickly, I wanted to come to John. You talked about the potential that refugees have. Do you also see that as one of the most important things that can be done, giving kids who have been displaced the equal opportunity for education and how that can open other doors? But what can be done at the country level and by international communities to make sure there's that playing level playing ground, even for a kid who is born as a refugee or is in a displaced internally?
The Refugee and Food Displacement Initiative report that came out last month from the Wilson Center identified six key areas that the international community and countries can make different in terms of policy that will improve their lives. One is focusing on prevention and preparedness. Again, displacement, you can't prepare for it. But once it's done, once people are displaced, the next key area is protection. Protect them through the policies. Third is talking about solution for the protracted refugees. That's those who have lived in camps for decades, just in like Kakuma, Dadaab, other camps. And then fourth is involve the refugee in decision making and on issues that affect them. Meaningful participation of refugees bring context and live experience through policy making. And then number five is to talk about, which is important here, the global cooperation. And the Global Compact on Refugees is a framework that other countries can follow, especially the host countries, which hold the large numbers of refugees. International community can provide resources, and that can help them integrate refugees so that they can make meaningful contribution to society. And finally is implementation of the policies themselves. Correct. Kenya recently had the Refugee Act, and I think that will pave the way, if implemented, to refugees to make sure they are part of the society they are in. And then, for example, in the United States here, they have the Welcome Call, where citizens can involve in bringing refugees from other countries. So those kind of innovative policies can help bring and unlock the potential that the refugees have.
Great. And Mary, I want to give you the last word here. Now, tell us what you've been doing also to give back, because most times people think, once I get out of the camp, I make it to the United States or elsewhere, you know, I focus on my life. What have you been doing?
I started an organization with three other co-founders, Elemisha Kakuma, and we've been able to place over 30 students to universities in the U.S., in Canada, and also in Europe. This program is based in Kakuma. We train and take the students over a 10 to 16-month prep. And like we are talking to universities, and we are encouraging each university take one refugee student. So that has been like a huge thing that I've been working on. And we are right now on our fourth year with the fourth cohort. Our first cohort is going to the third year of college, which makes me really happy. And I've seen so many universities come on my work as a goodwill ambassador. Like, of course, keeping to talking about refugees every single time. Last year, I was talking about 114 million displaced. Today is 120. That is 6 million in literally like a year. That's crazy for me to think about that. That is lives. That is 25 years in refugee camps. That is 30 years. Who knows how long they're going to be struggling. So I think that's a huge part. Advocacy every single day and creating opportunities for young refugees to access college.
Well, to think that you were that kid in that refugee camp some few years ago is that I think that should be a motivation for the whole world to do something about people who are displaced. We have to leave it right here. Thank you both for being on the show. Mary McHale, Goodwill Ambassador of the United Nations Refugee Agency, and John Thorne Majok, Director of Refugee and Forced Displacement Initiative at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.